The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA Live back on the airwaves.
It's officials night here at Real Racing USA Live, isn't it?
It's definitely officials night, and we've got the man who wrote the book on tech, Fritz Augustine. Fritz, welcome to Real Racing USA Live.
Well, thank you, sir.
It is an absolute honor to talk to you, Fritz. I mean, you've been in this business 49 years. They call you the top cop. They call you Pops. Tell us how it all started for you.
Well, I wish I really knew. I'm not sure. Back in the late 50s, I decided I was going to be the world's greatest race car driver. So I went out and built me up a car that I guess now you'd call it a street stock. And there was only two things that kept me out of that. One is I had no talent, and the other I had a bad temper. If it wouldn't have been for that, well, you'd have read about me. Just been doing it ever since. I've done it overseas. I've been very fortunate everywhere I was at. My commanding officers and the bases have always been lenient enough to let me take the time off necessary to pursue racing.
Well, you know, Fritz, I got to tell you, Skip Wall, and you know Skip, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Skip wrote a story about you that we ran it on our website. And, of course, we get all kinds of people reading it, and some of your relatives started sending Skip mail telling him that you were in the Navy, not the Marines.
Yeah, I was going to mention that to Skip, because some of my Navy buddies have gotten some mileage out of this already.
Oh, my God, I bet they have.
Uh-huh.
So you retired now at the end of the year here in the Pro Cup. Last race was your last deal in the...
Yes, sir, that was it.
Yeah. So, what are some of the highlights? I mean, I'm sure you know that's a big deal. That's a big step, obviously. And what are some of the highlights that you've thought about recently?
I think the best thing that ever happened to me in racing, I plugged along at various racetracks, did various things for various promoters, did whatever it took to everything from selling popcorn to cleaning toilets, and along came a man named Bob Harmon, who we all know and love. And Bob called one day and said, we're going to start a series, and this is what it's going to be, and I need a tech man. And I said, well, I don't think I'd like to be a tech man. I have never thought too much of them, and I don't think I want to be one. And he says, well, come on up here and let's talk. We didn't start talking to him, and he had a whole different viewpoint on racing than I had been accustomed to. He was there. Before that, it was us again you. It was the racers again the officials. And there was almost always a fight. You might not be in it, but you can bet there's going to be one there. And Bob said, we're not going to do that. This race, we're going to clean this racing up, make it a family sport, and make it fun for everybody. And I said, well, I'd like to think I can help. And the very next year, we started the All-Pro Series with the four exhibition races. And then the second year, we came out with a full-fledged schedule. And it took off from there. It ran good, and Bob was good to work for. He was a little strict once in a while, a little tough once in a while, but he was awfully, awfully fair.
So you were like right there in the founding of that series.
The day that he, Neil Bonnet, and Frankie Grill, and David Pearson sat down in Prattville, Alabama, to find out if this series would work, they had invited me up there, and I've been there. I was there for till All Pro closed. Not closed, but sold to NASCAR, and they took it.
Yeah.
That's saying something about a series when NASCAR wants it.
Yeah, we got kind of lucky. Everything went pretty good. I always had the best job of all because the flagman and the promoter and the race director and all them, they never get a chance to really get down there and rub elbows with the people that are putting on the show. And I kind of figured I was lucky getting down in amongst them.
Now, you know, I've heard a lot of stories about you, Fritz, but the thing that stands out the most is it seemed like you just had a knack for when people were pushing the line.
Well, you got to remember what pushing the line really is. You do it. I do it. I drove down the highway today. I don't know how many cops are listening, but I drove faster than 70. Now, I've done a lot of things like that. I was a kid that pushed the envelope pretty hard when I was growing up. And I wouldn't give you 15 cents for a carload of drivers that came trying to run second. And nobody calls you and asks you, what does second place pay? They call in about the Snowball Derby now, want to know if I'm going to be back down there. There's like 60-some cars signed up for the Derby and 75 signed up for the Snowflake. And they all want to know, what does it pay to win? Nobody's asked me yet what it pays to run second. So I guess there nobody's going to run second.
Yeah, I was at a racetrack earlier this year where a modified driver, been racing forever in Florida. He wanted to teach, he was making that kind of point, what you just made. He was trying to talk the promoter into paying the most money, paying more for running second than for first.
Yep.
So do you think your background gave you the knack to know when somebody was soaking a tire? Or?
It had to.
Yeah.
It had to. I otherwise I'd have stuck this out of the ground. I was lucky when I retired from the Navy. I had time, I had the funds, I had a retirement check, and a wife that had a fantastic job. So I went back to college. Bob Harmon told me when I retired, he says, you need to get a little more of the technical expertise of this. So I went back to college and finished my engineering degree, and it really helped me in racing.
Well, one of the things that I've asked this question many times is, you know, like at the local tracks, you go, people are always, you know, of course, griping about the flag man or the tech man, or they don't know this or they don't know that. And a lot of times, maybe there's some merit there, you know, because the guys don't know. Like, there's no place to go. There's no school you go to learn to be a flagman, or no school you go to learn to be a tech man. And then I was talking to some folks up at New Smyrna, I guess your friend Mark. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you actually put a school together and had a booklet that you put together, and you still do? You still update it?
Yeah. I started that in 98, and we started it I started before that handing out brochures, and I did it on the Internet through a thing I called CASO, which was Competition Auto Speed Sports Official. And I got took over by drag racing and stuff that I didn't know anything about. And it just ate me up. I didn't know anything about it, and I couldn't help them. So I decided I better find me something that I can do. I'll stick with stock cars, and we'll go from there and try to put something together. So I guess in 97 was the first year that I had it. And I thought, well, I'll try it. And this was not my idea, by the way. This was my wife, Bob Harmon. Decided that's what I ought to do. And I did. I wrote it, and I thought, well, let's see if anybody buy it. And surprisingly enough, a lot of promoters jumped on it. And I made it worth their while. They pay me expenses and $20 for each official they send in there, and I furnish the book.
Yeah. Sounds pretty reasonable.
But we tried to get it set up because a lot of guys really didn't know. They wanted to know. They wanted to do a good job. I think every inspector would like to do a good job.
Sure.
Just some of them have to bluff their way through because they don't know, and some of them have to honestly say they don't know. And the racer finds out that you don't know a particular thing, you can bet he's going to use it.
Well, speaking of something on that subject, what about this subject of traction control?
Okay, what about it?
What do you know about traction control?
Well, I wrote a paper for an organization, and they sent it out to all of their tracks on the 9 traction controls I know of and how to catch them.
Really?
Can you tell by watching a car on the track, basically, if it's got traction control?
It depends on what traction control is on the car.
Okay.
The really, really good ones, no. Nope, I can't.
No?
Now, I can take, what I did was I went and bought an old military surplus tape recorder, a two-channel tape recorder. And I put a 1,000 cycle tone on one channel and put the noise out of the exhaust on the other. And if I set that up and watch it, I can tell you when the traction control cuts in and cuts out.
There's 9 basic traction controls out there?
Well, now that's all I know. There may be 400.
Right, right. That's the way I've heard it.
The 9 that I know of, yeah.
Now, Fritz, you've had to probably just about seen it all. What's some of the more unique things people have tried to slide by you?
The most unique thing I ever saw in my life, I went over and congratulated the driver and the car owner, shook his hand and hugged that boy's neck. We were in Nashville, Tennessee, and a young man came in there, and he set the world on fire. He was 3/4 of a second. I had All-Pro. He was 3/4 of a second faster than anybody else. And when you've got people like Butch Lindley and Gary Ballou and these Dick Andersons and them boys out there, and somebody turns 3/4 of a second faster than they got, he's doing something wrong. Whether or not you catch it, I don't know. And we went to look at it. And couldn't find it until I got under the car and was just generally looking, and I didn't know what I was looking for. But between this man's exhaust pipe and the frame was a little piece of braided hosing, about an inch long between them. And what he had done, he had gone inside there and took a 4-inch by 4-inch piece of channel, put it from the right front to the left rear of the car, and Teflon'd it on the inside. And then took his lid and Teflon'd it and greased it. And what he would do, the crew chief would walk up to the side of the car before, when he cranked it up, put his leg again in the exhaust. It would create pressure. It would put pressure down that little braided hosing against the Teflon and shove that thing clear to the left rear corner of the car. And the driver would put a pin in the little hole. There's a big soft spring behind that lid. After the race is over, he just pulls the pin. And the vibration and that soft spring puts the lead back up to the right front corner.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Just downright cheating.
No, that's not cheating. That's smart.
Okay.
There is a very definite difference. He got away with something, and they told the guys up there, they said, "We know he's got something." I said, "Well, no kidding, you don't wreck it." And we started looking, and it took me the better part of an hour to find it. And with 65 to 70 cars there, you don't have the better part of an hour to spend on each car.
Right.
But we found it, and I had him park the car, and we chained it up so he couldn't use it. And I went over to him and told him, I said, "I'd like to talk to you. Who designed that?" He said, "Well, we kind of did." And I said, "Well, I'd like to shake your hand." And we shook his hand, shook the owner's hand, and they sent him on their way.
Can you say who that was? Okay.
He's a friend of mine now.
Oh, okay.
Well, he was a friend that day, too. It's just that we were on the opposite sides of the fence.
Right, right. And you were just doing your job.
That's all you're doing. And as long as racers realize you're just doing your job, and they're just doing theirs, a crew chief that doesn't stretch the rules right as far as the tech man let him, he's not helping his driver as much as he can.
What do you think about the kids? We have a, you know, obviously you're aware, I mean, we have so many, I mean, we have what we call the youth movement in full swing.
Uh-huh. Well, I would have said 2 or 3 or 4 years ago that, no, they're a flash in the pan, don't worry about it. But when you look around at some of these boys now, some of these kids, as I'll call them, they are real race car drivers. They've got their stuff together. Now, I talked to a couple of them off and on, and I talked to one real closely down in Lakeland the other night. And he's not just a race car driver, and he's not just a 16-year-old kid. He knows some stuff about race cars. He knows some stuff about setups. He knows some stuff about engines. He's a knowledgeable young man for being 16 years old. He's amazing.
Right. Yeah, you have to have seen a few of those, more than a few of those in the recent years in the Pro Cup. I mean, they've had some.
I'm going to call him a kid. Kid like Joey Clanton.
Sure.
Or you look at Joey. Uh, oh going to Busch now. He's in Busch now. Anyhow.
Logano.
That's it, Logano.
Yeah.
He come out and raced with us halfway through the season. He turned 15. About three races later, we was up in Salem, Indiana. I don't know if you're familiar with that racetrack, but that is a fast, fast,
yep, sure,
driver's racetrack. And if you don't stay right up against that wall, you're not going to run with the boys, the big boys. Joey put that thing up there and won the race at 15 years old, like his third Hooters race.
Mm-hmm.
And he won it. And, of course, we couldn't give him champagne. There's a lot of things. The kids are coming along. They've got more experience, though. It seems like back 15 years ago, when a kid come in, he had maybe 1, maybe 2 years experience at best. Some of these boys have been driving go-karts, and there are series. There are stepping stone series for these boys now.
Right.
They can go out here, and one of the best series that I know of is that Allison Legacy series.
Mm-hmm.
They get real race cars. Those cars are, they can be sat up and everything else, and there's just tons of these. The boys are getting a lot of good education, a lot of good experience, and a lot of laps.
Right, and you know, like you said, at 16 years old, Jack said it earlier, a lot of these kids are almost grizzled veterans by now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They're just terrible. They're good.
Yep.
And it's fun to work with them. It's really, really fun to work with them. Now, it's also fun to work with the old grizzly bears.
Right.
Like Bobby Gill.
Bobby Gill's a very good example. Bobby Gill and I go way back. First time he left home, so to speak, he went for Bob Harmon's Keep It Simple Kiss series, they called it. And it was Keep It Simple Stupid. The race cars were a very simple race car, and Bobby came to Pensacola. It was the first Kiss race. He came up there and won it. And then he won one over at Mobile. And that was the first time he had ventured out from his local racetracks down there.
Right.
I got to know him at that time, and I've really got to know him since then. And Bob is a tremendous person. He's one of those kind of guys that when he goes to the racetrack, he don't see nothing but that race car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely sees 100% of the race car.
You walk through the deal, you know, when you're there pre-race doing your media stuff, and you know, I don't know about me, but when I go up anywhere near Bobby Gill, I just like, okay, I'll go talk to one of these kids. You know, I don't even want to talk to this guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But
he's focused.
I went to a race years ago, and I wasn't working. It was in Montgomery, Alabama, in the Southern All-Stars race. And Bob wasn't racing, but he was there. And I walked over and sat down on the trailer and didn't expect too much of a conversation, of course. And, you know, we had a real nice conversation, talked about everything and nothing, just everything. He was just a nice, he's a good old boy.
Right.
The very next Saturday night, we were racing in Greenville Pickens, and Bob was running with us. I went over and said something to him. He said, yeah, is there anything else? I mean, like, that's the entire conversation.
Right.
But he has tunnel vision towards that car. And I think that's one of the reasons he's so successful is that
no
he
doubt.
Concentrates on.
Well, yeah, now this year in the Pro Cup, what do you think was some of the big contributing factors of Bobby coming back and winning the thing with, you got these development teams and like the young kids and tons of money? And you know, how did Bobby do it?
Bob never races the racers until he's ready to race the racers. You watch Bob, he don't lead many laps up early. But he's there. He's waiting. He's looking. And from listening on his radio, he's working with stuff all the time. He's never satisfied with that car. Well, it might be a little bit better if we could do a little bit here, a little bit there. And when time comes to go, he goes.
Mm.
And as we saw the other night now, had a, not a rookie, but a second-year veteran pull up beside him at the last few laps and started to pressure him. And I said at the time, I said, oh, the boy's just about to go to school. And sure enough, he went to school.
Yeah.
And I've watched him so many times, and he's just flat good.
He's always out there. He's always hanging around. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, he's always hanging around.
Yep.
Fritz, I got to ask you, you've been a tech man for a long time. Has there ever been that point where you watched a hell of a race go down and close at the end, and you get the guys in tech, and the guy won, and you look at the car, and you see something, and it's right there on the edge? Have you ever had to think about whether to DQ him or not?
Yes, sir. Yep.
What kind of feelings go through you at that time?
It hurts. It hurts bad, because this particular man was a good friend of mine. He didn't come back. He has not come back and raced yet.
Right.
He is a tremendous race car driver. Luckily, he has gone on to bigger and better things. But we had to DQ him, and it was one of the toughest jobs you have, is putting him out for something like that. Now, it was something that I honestly don't believe they did it with the intent of cheating, but it did enhance the performance of the vehicle. And it was beyond the rule.
Right.
So, you got it.
Yeah, and, you know, Fritz, you're basically the tech man is the deciding factor of that gray area, right?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Explain what the gray area is to people out there.
Okay. There are things that will make a difference, and there are things that won't make a difference. Now, I went to a racetrack once. In fact, I took my school to it. And this one young tech inspector looked at the rules, and he says, "Well, I see something here. Good, what do you see?" And he says, "Do you know how tall the letters are supposed to be on the car?" I says, "If you measure a man's numbers on his car and say one derogatory thing to him, the first thing you do is defend yourself, because I'm coming after you." Now, that is, to me, that's not even a gray area. That's one of those things. There are gray areas, yes. And you have to look at it just to see what it was. Now, we had a man one night put the left side tires on the right side and right side tires on the left side. Now, naturally, he went to the rear almost immediately. The car wouldn't handle it. It was a piece of junk. He brought it in, and I was there to see what was going on. I noticed the tires were on the wrong side. Now, Technically, it said that those left side tires can't be used on the right and the right can't be used on the left. Technically, I could have disqualified him at that time and told him to park the car.
Right.
To me, that's a gray area. That's time for a little common sense.
It wasn't helping him.
And I think common sense is the gray area.
Yeah.
And to be, besides having very broad shoulders, tech men really need that common sense factor.
Well, yeah, and they got to try to remember that those are the boys that are putting on the race out there. We aren't. Nobody comes to watch tech.
Right.
Come to watch that race. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's fun most of the time. There are harsh moments. But almost always, if you'll get a man in the trailer and let him vent, he's going to have some things to say, let's face it. He's just spent a week and a half laying under that car getting it just like he wants it, and you told him it's wrong.
Right.
So he's going to raise some cane. Let him vent. Let him get all true and then tell him, "Look, I understand where you're coming from, but here's where it is. This is what the rule says. You and I both are going to go by these rules. I'm not going to make you weigh 50 pounds more than the rule book says, and you're not going to weigh 50 pounds less than the rule book says. Now, the book's here. The book's easy to understand. We've told you, and that's it. Now, I hate you don't like it, but we just don't agree."
Right.
And another thing I do after I have disqualified someone or they've had a bad night and had to talk about it, I go to his trailer. Go to his trailer. He don't leave that racetrack until he and I got it settled and shake hands. If it takes 2 hours, which it has, it just takes 2 hours.
Right.
And it's 2 hours well spent.
No doubt.
He's got to realize that I ain't Jesus. I'm just there doing a job. I'm doing the best I can do, and I may make a mistake. he better hope I'm right. He better hope I'm good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to the Governor's or the Snowball Derby this year?
I don't know. I talked to Tim. I talked to Timmy Bryant down in Rotor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I talked to him, and I'd like to go down. He says you don't need any help, he doesn't think, but he'd like to have me around.
Of course.
Yeah, we talked to him last week.
To cover those gray areas.
We talked to him last week, and he said something when we asked him about you. I can't remember what. Rick, can you remember?
I can't remember.
I can't remember. He had some funny thing he said. I can't remember it either. But, yeah, that's got to be something you look forward to every year, huh?
It is. Well, you know, I lived there in Pensacola for 35 years.
Sure.
And that was the thing you look forward to. And the thing is, you go somewhere else. You go to Milwaukee. You talk to a racer in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, oh, you're from Pensacola. Snowball Derby, right? That's a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal all over the country.
It's a very big deal.
And now the All-American 400 has grown. So it's a pretty good-sized race. And, yeah, I'll probably be over there.
Yeah, you just look at the entries. Man, it's... You better bring your good stuff to that race, man.
Well, you know, I was just looking at the Snowflake entry.
Mm-hmm.
And the Snowflake itself has got enough good drivers in it that could win it.
Sure.
There's probably 15, 20 in there that I can look at right now and tell you they've got a good chance of taking the money home.
Yeah.
And that's the good thing that we've been very fortunate in the Hooters Pro Cup. We've been able to keep it level playing enough that anytime you go to the racetrack, there's six or eight guys to win that race.
Always. Very competitive. Very competitive.
Always has been, too.
And you look at the qualifying times, and the qualifying times are going to be, the top 20 are going to be within a quarter of a second easily.
Sure.
I've been to several Pro Cup races where the top five break the track record.
Yeah.
Fritz, after 49 years, what are you going to miss the most?
The racers.
The drivers and the racers themselves.
The drivers, the crew chiefs. You can only wrestle a man so many years until you get to know him.
Right.
And I think I wrestle about each one of them at least once. it's something. I'm sure I'm going to miss it. You bet your life I'm going to miss it. But I've had an advantage in that. Gene Cox and Tony have given us extremely good back. If I said something was green, they just got the paint out and started painting. They backed me 100%. They got Daniel Schmidt. I think you know him now.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's helped me for 15, 16 years. And he's going to step in there. And he's going to do a good job. And honestly, I believe he'll do as good a job as I could have done. I think he'll take on right where I was at.
Yeah, but I bet he hears a few, Fritz would have done. Well, yeah. Fritz would have said.
They call him Little Fritz and all that. And he says, thank you very much, and keeps walking. And Daniel and I not only are fellow tech officials, we're very good friends.
So,
I know his family real well. I love his wife and daughter, and just, you know, we're good friends.
Well, Fritz, I know you ain't going to be sitting around watching soap operas on TV or reruns. What are you going to be doing here? You going to write a book now?
I've got one started.
Good for you. Good for you. That's cool.
I'm also updating the Tech Inspector's technical seminar book.
Yep.
The textbook, as I call it. I'm updating it a little bit. There's some things happened this last couple of years that's not in the 2005 edition. And, yeah, I've got a book started. And I'm pretty close to Lake City.
Right.
And there's a racetrack at Lake City.
There's two of them.
And I just might drop down there on a weekend and see those boys.
Well, you can start giving Don Nerone some advice up there.
Don and I, that's kind of funny because Don was the headed up our Hooters series when we first started it.
Right.
And we had the Formula cars, and the late models, and the Sportsman cars. We had every kind of a car you could think of. And Don and I were together at that time. Yeah. Oh, he knows I'm coming back. He knows I'm moving around. I'll probably give him a little grief.
Well, you know, 49 years in racing, I mean, what a career, you know.
It would have been 50, but I had to take a year off to take a vacation in Southeast Asia for a year.
Oh, did you? Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You know, the respect that you got from the drivers, the crews, so many tech guys, you know, they just don't seem to get it to how to do that.
They're too important. They're honestly too important. If they really realize what they're there for, we are the least important people at the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
We work about 6 minutes a day. We measure some cars and we check, make sure they're high enough and all. But we work about 6 minutes a day. After they get the head torn off and everything else, you can check it in about 6 minutes. And anybody who thinks he's important should not become a tech inspector because he's not going to be important.
Right. Exactly.
And it's a shame. I would have liked to have been somebody big, but it just don't work that way. You're a tech inspector and that's all you are, and you got to get used to that.
Yeah, well, you know what? All the tech inspectors in Florida, in the world, you're probably the most well-known.
Well, I don't know about that, but I sure
can. You name another one?
I sure made a lot of friends.
Who are some of the people in the business that do what you do that you hold in high regard?
A man that used to work for Tom Curley named Stan Meserve. He's Earnhardt's plate man now. It works on setups for Earnhardt.
Uh-huh.
And he ran the ACT series, and I had the opportunity to work for him at one of the, what'd they call it, Stock Car Connection. The Stock Car Connection races when ASA and ACT and All-Pro all went, and NASCAR all went together and put on a show. They put on a show up in Canada, put one on down in Nashville, and they were big shows now because they bring the big guns in. Stan Meserve was the tech man, so I had a chance to work with him, and I've got to know him since then. And Stan, he stands awfully tall in my book.
Well, that's awesome. You know, how do I want to put this? What race in your 49 years stands out the most to you?
Well, there's two.
Two?
Yeah. One was a race in Birmingham. It was a Hooters race.
Uh-huh.
When the end of the race came, we had four or five cars within a half second of each other. They were just one big wad of cars.
Uh-huh.
In the center of Birmingham racetrack used to be a football field. I would stand out there in line with start-finish line so I could help look and see who won the race.
Uh-huh.
And I stood there screaming and cheering, and to this moment, don't know who I was cheering for.
It was just that good.
It was so good, I just was screaming my butt off. I wanted somebody to win it. Sure enough, they did. Marty Lindley wound up winning it.
Uh-huh.
But I was just screaming. And the other one would have been the worst race I've ever had in my entire life, was the night we hurt Butch Lindley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a sad one right there.
Yeah.
He was as good a race car driver as I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
He could make a race car do things that a race car can't do.
Wasn't supposed to do anyway.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. He's that good.
I tell you, one of my most memorable races is a Hooters Pro Cup race when Derek Kelly came back from two laps down at Lakeland.
That side-by-side finish there?
No.
Huh?
Wow. Photo finish.
Derek got out of that car and tired, he couldn't see straight.
Right.
He had flat carried that machine for the last 50 laps.
And Fritz, we're going to be talking here in a few minutes with Joe Schmalling. Who's he's with that new deal doing the Super Cups, and he said you had told him that if you retired that he could call you on you anytime, and he said expect to see a draft notice in the mail.
Well, I've got Joe on my speed dial.
Okay.
Joe and Kathleen are super people, and he'll do a good job there. He'll do a tremendous job for us.
So where do you see it all going? How do you see this whole, especially the big guns, where do you see this kind of racing going?
Well, honestly, there's a there's a big influx of cars coming in. There's 750 cars going to become available, or they came available this last weekend.
Right.
750. And that's awesome. That's scary.
Isn't it, though?
Now, when we started our series that we have now, we more or less took over the NASCAR Sportsman cars that they had stopped. They stopped running them, and we picked them up. Now, somebody is waiting out there in the wings, and I don't know who it is, but there's somebody sitting out there in the wings right now. Says, my God, there's 750 race cars sitting there ready to drive. They should be out making noise somewhere.
And there's plenty of drivers ready to go drive them.
Ready to get in them.
And I can't tell you who's going to do it, but I will be one of the most surprised people in town if somebody don't get it to do it.
Yeah, they're not going to take them and put them out in the desert with the jet planes to sit. Yes, that's for sure. Yeah.
These things are going to make noise in April or May.
Yeah, and there's too many of them to make a museum out of them.
Oh, yeah. it's going to be fun to watch. And somebody says, well, ARCA's going to have a lot of cars. ARCA can't use 750.
No.
Exactly.
I mean, they can use 100, 100 and a quarter, probably.
Uh-huh.
But the other 600?
They got to go somewhere.
Race cars that are good race cars. Those, by the time you get to Nextel Cup, you've got a jam-up race car.
Uh-huh.
I can't see it sitting there.
I'll tell you, Fritz, my wish is that they get them and they stick them on some short tracks.
Oh, yes.
And keep them there.
Well, we're going to run this. I say we. I keep saying that, but I'm not part of it anymore. The Hooters is going to run at Milwaukee this next year.
Right.
And then, of course, they run Lakeland. We're going to run Bristol. And they're going to run Rockingham.
Right.
That's a big one.
That's a one-mile track.
Yeah.
To me, that's as big a track as we better get on.
Yep.
I would rather see on three-quarter and smaller. I love a half-mile to 5/8 racetrack, like Lakeland, for example.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
You can put on a tremendous show there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a driver can showcase his abilities. They can showcase the car. And we get a pretty good race out of it for the fans. And anytime you can get a good crowd of cars and a good crowd in the stands at the same time, you win.
Yeah, you know, I think Kenny Wallace said it best. Hooters Pro Cup will always survive as long as they don't outgrow themselves.
That's the thing right there.
Yep.
See, we have to be careful. Again, I say we, and I shouldn't be doing that.
You'll always be we.
Probably. But they are going to have to make sure that they don't outgrow themselves. Don't become too important in your own mind. They'll be doing great.
All right, Fritz. I'm sure that... I can see it now. We're going to be talking to you again.
Oh, no doubt.
I imagine before, what, March?
Yeah.
Something's going to happen, and we're going to ring your bell, man.
Yeah. We might be calling him after the Snowball Derby.
Yeah, could you ever know. Appreciate you spending some time here with us tonight. And best of luck on everything, and I can't wait for that book to come out.
Yeah.
Well, there's no beeper on a book, so I'm going to have to take care of a couple.
There you go, man.
Yeah, you need to have an edited version and an unedited version.
That's what this guy that's helping write it told me.
One for the pits, one for the grandstands.
Uh-huh.
There you go. All right, Fritz. We'll talk to you soon.
Happy Thanksgiving, Fritz.
Thank you, sir. You too. Y'all take care and good job.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Fritz Augustine.
Now, where do you get back-to-back interviews like that?
Man, Real Racing USA.